Galatians 5, Paul's sometimes prickly, sometimes provocative, and enduringly pastoral letter to the Galatian church. In a time of great need and crisis and difficulty and conflict, he writes these words. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. Do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. For the entire law is filled in keeping this one command: love your neighbor as yourself. May God bless the reading and the hearing of the word today. Well, as I indicated, as Larry led us so capably to remember, we are wrapping up and turning the page on this summer's study of Trevor Hudson's book, Beyond Loneliness, where the theme of friendship featured so prominently that we couldn't miss it. The goal, the hope, the vision for this kind of conversation is in some ways to lay the groundwork for a transformational experience in your relationship and with our church's relationship with God, so that we might view God as friend. And as I look back in preparation for this week, but then also just sort of looking back on my life, and I wonder if this resonates with you, that friendships, usually the most enduring friendships, sometimes pop up in the very unlikeliest of places or places you don't expect. Maybe you're forced to sit together at a banquet table somewhere, or maybe you find yourself in a common struggle. I stayed connected for some time with the people that I had to go to traffic court with to get the points removed from my license one time. And we were all there on a Saturday together, and oh, you know, it's a special kind of bond that you form there. Sometimes it happens even in the midst of a disagreement. And as you persist in disagreeing, if you are sufficiently mature as to empathize and listen deeply to what somebody else has to say, sometimes those disagreements can become the place where true friendships are forged. Friendships sometimes surprise us. And friendships, when they are true, will shape our lives in ways we don't anticipate and inform our futures in ways we never planned for ourselves. And I was thinking about how to illustrate this. And I'm going to talk about this season in my life as a co-parent with Janelle, with three very active, talented children who are engaged in school. They have friendships, they have activities, they have clubs, and none of them has a driver's license yet to be able to drive completely on his own. And so there's a lot of carpooling. There's a lot of parent-to-parent engagement, household-to-household engagement. And I've discovered, as I have gotten to know the caregivers, the parents, the grandparents, sometimes aunts, uncles, or neighbors in the households where our children have friends, that there are really strong bonds that can bring us together. Now, as Christians, and specifically as Christian ministers married to one another for a long time, Janelle and I have sort of gotten used to that question, you know, what do you do? And then they sort of wince when we tell them exactly what it is we do. You can see them rewinding the tape in their head. Have I done something that's going to get me judged, or am I going to be on their prayer list when I go home? That sort of thing. But in these circles of friends, it's very different. And what I mean when I say that is it is in knowing these friends that I realized how insulated my life as a minister is. That I live in a bubble in many ways in terms of understanding how a good number, if not the majority of folks in the world and in our neighborhood, currently view Christianity and currently view the church. Not Yates Baptist Church, but the church. And it's been a very new experience to connect with people deeply at this level who are not Christians. Sometimes, some of them have chosen it. Some of them, it's a little more by chance. But in getting to know them, I have come to understand the church's deep reputational burden in our society. And there are more and more people in the emerging generations in our neighborhood and in our communities who are distancing themselves from church and the ministry of the church and the identification with Christianity. Some are just choosing not to engage at all because there are so many disgraceful voices that have taken over media and society, and they have misused the name of Jesus for personal gain or political power or social material influence. And I know in theory that's the case, but it wasn't until I had friends who could give voice to it in a way that was not threatening, but honest, to help me understand the bubble that I inhabit some days. And of course, these are friends who are deeply loved by Jesus. And I have a responsibility to be a witness, to bear witness to who Jesus is and what Jesus does in the lives of those who receive him. And what I'm learning is that evangelism, so-called, falls quite flat if it is based on pressure or bargaining or correction. But instead, Janelle and I have chosen to invest deeply in friendship, in giving and receiving of gifts and love and time and affirmation and attention and ideas. And it's in those friendships that, honestly, I've found that I've been able to tell the story of my faith with incredible transparency and thorough authenticity. Because the fruit of those relationships is trust. Good friendships are about trust. And many of those households, despite their skepticism about this thing we're on as a church, this faith train following Jesus wherever he may lead, despite their skepticism and all that, they've entrusted their children to our care in our house. And quite a few of them have entrusted their children to Yates. You should know that. Some have asked to go to camp, and Danny helps them find a way. Quite a few prioritize Sunday nights with youth and kids. Some of these adults, they do come to Yates every once in a while, usually at a high point in church life, a big service, or, you know, perhaps it's special music, something like that. And they leave and they ask their questions. And we can engage as friends around things that really matter. It's one of the most evangelistic experiences of my life. And in many ways, my own experience of God grows more intimate the more deeply I prioritize friendship in these relationships with the wider world. It all starts with friendship. And so we're concluding this summer study of Beyond Loneliness. And I want to ask you, as we begin today, what if you viewed your relationship with God as a friendship? Would that change the way you love, in the way you live, the way you serve? And to make it perhaps more real or concrete for you, just simply look back in your own story and think of a friendship that's unique to you, that really shaped your life. Imagine how much more profound and far-reaching it could be if that sort of formative power existed in your relationship with God, rather than simply trying to understand and obey all the rules and to keep up appearances for your neighbors. If we're going to talk about the freedom to make a move like that, to talk about freedom at all, as the Apostle Paul tells the Galatians today, we have to identify what we mean first by that word freedom. As Christians, what do we mean by that? Because so often it's caricatured in our society in a very specific way. Freedom means acting without any real constraints or accountability. That's what freedom means. But the freedom that Christ offers, that the apostle is teaching about today, is something quite different. That freedom is not freedom from something first. Instead, it is freedom for something. It's a freedom to choose and lean into a profound relationship with God and, in many ways, to receive the power to extend that same kind of relationship, that same quality of friendship to others. There was a moment of controversy. I say that as if it stands alone. There was a moment of controversy in Jesus' life. This one happened in John chapter 8. Where Jesus declares to some of his antagonists, if the Son makes you free, you are free indeed. Now, the controversy that he's dealing with is that Jesus is arguing with and disputing with some of the Jewish leaders who believe him. They're curious and they're starting to believe in him, but even more important than Jesus' identity and Jesus' message is their own lineage. And so it is very important to them that they lean on that descendancy from Abraham. That is the source of their freedom. And they say, we have never been slaves to anyone, which is a profound kind of bit of irony. They seem to have forgotten that whole thing we call the Exodus. And Jesus doesn't even point to that as part of their lineage as well. Instead, he points to their current experience as slaves to sin. And unless you can reckon with the ways that you tie your own self up in knots in your sin, you'll never experience true liberation. And so freedom, in the way Jesus is talking about it here, is crucial because it is a confrontation of all the complacency and all the self-righteousness that can block the deeper relationship that God craves and invites with us. And Jesus' message here of freedom is a call to recognize and be honest enough about those spiritual chains that bind us up. You may not see them, but you will feel them. Back in our summer study, we were called to imagine a shift in seeing God as some distant ruler to an intimate and close friend. And that transformation isn't about giving you all the personal freedom you want. It's about being freed and liberated from sometimes all those things you want in order to be able to serve God's good purposes in the world, to participate in a mission beyond yourself, to bring healing hands, helpful words, companionship where it is desperately needed, to those who are withering and dying in their loneliness. But those modern chains aren't always visible to us. And we have to be able to recognize the ways that our self-interest, our self-reliance, or our materialism, or our constant fixation on busyness and all of the rest keeps us from embracing the true freedom that Christ offers, that transforms us and empowers us to build deep and meaningful relationships. And so that is when we hear Paul's words again from Galatians. It's a really powerful insight, I think, into the nature of freedom, because the Apostle Paul tells you what I just told you. Actually, I just told you what the Apostle Paul told folks long ago. That it's not about self-indulgence. Freedom in the life of a Christian is celebrated because it affords us the choice to love and serve one another. You were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love, become servants, become slaves to one another. The whole law is summed up in one commandment: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And when we embrace Jesus' offer to freedom, we begin to experience that freedom, not because we manufacture it, but because we receive it from God, whether it's in our prayer or in our worship or in our daily interactions. They can be characterized more and more by that word, freedom. Because God, in God's own self, at the heart of who God is freedom. We could spend all day surveying the scriptures. I just picked a couple of stories that you're probably familiar with. Hagar and Ishmael in Genesis chapter 21. These two who were from a slave caste in their society are marginalized. They're abandoned and cast into the wilderness. And it is there in their loneliness that God meets them with compassion, provides for their needs, reassures them of a secure future. That God's friendship's extending to all of those places on the fringe we may or may not even care to see, much less notice. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Jonah in Nineveh. And despite their history of opposition, of being enemies of God and God's people, the Ninevites repent when they are warned of impending judgment, and God shows mercy, demonstrating a willingness to extend friendship and forgiveness to those who turn it around, regardless of their past. Jesus told many stories and performed many acts that demonstrated this same idea. I think most of us know the story of the prodigal son, or as it's listed in my Bible, the lost son, which I kind of prefer. Luke chapter 15, that lost son squanders his inheritance, and then he's welcomed back with open arms. God's love, like the one in this story, is unconditional. And no matter how far we stray, God freely chooses grace. God freely chooses compassion. God freely chooses reconciliation. And it doesn't make sense, and it's not fair as we reckon fair. And God's free to choose and chooses love. You know, we can't read these words from Galatians about freedom and the transforming power of being loved and loving our neighbor without remembering that it's Paul who wrote them. Paul. If anyone in the scriptures had a transformed experience of how to understand a relationship with God, it's this man, Saul, who became Paul. He was Saul, a fierce persecutor of Christians. And then he encounters Jesus on the road to Damascus. And at that point, there's a radical shift in his life. He's no longer an enemy of Christ. There's no longer enmity there, but instead, Jesus has made a move toward friendship. And everything is turned over for the Apostle Paul. And sometimes we can't imagine that it could be true, that in the kingdom of heaven, as Jesus calls his disciples to live, that enemies really can be forgiven and reconciled. But that's a failure of our imagination. That's how humans think. How many old barriers, old divider lines, old hurts are just simply chalked up to that's the way it is? And God in God's freedom says that's not the way it has to be, because I say so and I choose it. Paul embodies the choice toward transformation of enemies made friends. Over and over again, the scriptures tell that story, but for Paul, this wasn't some abstract concept. It wasn't a bit of arcane or obscure theology. It was a deeply personal experience of grace for him. He knew firsthand the transformational power of God's friendship. And I do want to ask you, is it personal for you? For us as a church, or do we take it for granted at some point, forgetting the extraordinary nature of friendship and the grace that brought it to us and the incredible power to change lives, to change whole towns, indeed the whole world, by its power. Whether you're at home, whether you're at work, whether you're far away on mission, or you're right here on a kind of an ordinary Monday, does that friendship and the incredible, vivid understanding of that friendship as a work of grace, does it impact the way you carry yourself through your days? It's an important question. It's in the forefront of Paul's message each and every time he encountered his churches. And it's something we can do too, usually not just with code words or a magic phrase, but instead in what we do. When Jesus was giving, in a sense, his last wishes, the final word before he was gone from the presence and from, or rather from the sight of his disciples in John chapter 15, he told them, love one another as I have loved you. And it's more than just a directive. It's more than a mandate. It's not a memo from on high. It's an invitation to participate in this life-changing friendship with God. And Jesus elevates the disciples to that place of co-laboring friends who understand and can participate and engage with the very will of the one who has called us to follow. And this one whose life was marked by self-giving and a deep intimacy, ongoing intimacy and care with God. That is the one who calls us friends. And in friendship, tells us and shows us what it means to love one another. Larry used in his prayer that wonderful little phrase in Beyond Loneliness. I was quoting it too. I'm just going to quote the back half. He says, at the heart of the Christian faith lies an extravagant, grace-filled, and mind-blowing offer. God passionately longs to be friends with us. It's more than just a comfort in our lonely moments. It's a call to action. And so the mission for us as Christians who are friends of God, because Jesus has said it, our mission is clear. We don't look at the neighborhood. We don't look at our kind of fellow travelers out here in Durham or wherever we are as problems to fix. They're friends to make. And I think about some of the missions that are at the forefront, even this week and next week, families moving forward, right? We have volunteers and we're taking up this collection. The whole idea of families moving forward is built upon forming relationships that are rooted in respect and dignity. It's more than just providing shelter. It's about building trust with our neighbor, enough trust to be able to convert all of that isolation they experience in their unsheltered lives into engagement. And if there's enough trust, we can begin to offer the sort of support and advice and counsel that only an ongoing relationship can mediate to build a bridge to a sustainable future, where they're not only dependent in the moment on what it is we might provide, but be able to share what they have with others. And the gift of service multiplies. Every week, Danny puts out the call, come join me at Open Table. Open Table is an amazing intervention into our community's unsheltered friends and neighbors. Open Table is not intended to solve all the problems those who experience homelessness encounter. More than anything, it is about building relationships and friends. And so every single volunteer who steps into that space begins to understand the individual stories and the very human needs that they experience in loving and serving these unsheltered friends. It's quiet, it's humble, but I guarantee you the next time you stop at a stoplight and somebody's asking for change, you will experience the ask differently. Because you might even know that person by name. Think of all those sins that I kind of pointed to at the beginning that can get in the way, that bind us up, materialism or busyness or self-reliance or our addictions or fear of other people. Friendship has the power to break every last one of those chains as we build connections with those around us. And so we're concluding now this summer series, and I want us to reflect on the very profound invitation that we are extended in the call to friendship. Because within that call, within that invitation, is the purchase of our freedom. And it's a freedom unlike what we often celebrate in our world. Jesus offers us a freedom that isn't about doing whatever we want, whenever we want to do it, but living out a relationship that transforms how we relate to others. And so we live out that freedom by loving and serving each other, by embodying the friendship that God makes with us, and in small, daily acts of kindness, sometimes larger acts of service, we can reflect God's love and God's grace in everything that we do. And so take this moment and ask again, what steps, as I leave this place today, will I take to fully embrace, or at least more fully embrace, the freedom that Christ offers in our daily lives? And how can we live that friendship that God offers us out? And how can we be friends to this world? I pray that we would be a community that reflects God's transforming love in every action, every interaction. And it comes when we live in freedom, the freedom of Christ, a freedom that invites us into a deeper relationship with God and empowers us to befriend the whole world. Amen. And if that's the direction you want your life to take, it comes from following Jesus, learning from him, relying on him, and committing to follow him wherever he may lead. You can't do it alone, but there's no one that can make that choice for you. Here, you're free to make that choice. And if you do, you can make that decision known to God and then known to Yates. And we will walk with you. We will support you as you do. Perhaps you need to return to a commitment you made a long time ago, or there's another decision that you need to make today. Whatever it is, whatever it need be, take this time of offering as a time to offer yourself again. And if you'd like to make your decision known to this congregation as we sing our concluding hymn, I'll welcome you at the front, and we'll gladly present you, and we will pray with you and work with you each and every day as we go forward. But now let us pause and respond to all God has given us.